Your next promotion is just the beginning, and this podcast shows you how to get there. Welcome to episode number 187. The woman I am interviewing today is absolutely phenomenal. She takes corporate badassness to the next level. And how do I know this? Well, I could tell from the minute that I saw her on LinkedIn and the emails that she used when she reached out to me, I knew that this woman was my type of woman. I knew that she was incredible and up to really big things. How did I know that? Well, it was the energy that she put out. It was her vibe. It was the way that she communicated with me. Now, inside my corporate programs, you might feel like, well, this is something I'm not going to get. But I have broken down for you exactly how to vibe with other executive leaders that way. And BBG, who you're going to listen to in today's episode, specializes specifically on visibility. She shares her own challenges with visibility. She actually gives me coaching, so make sure that you listen all the way through the episode, because at the end, I get real and vulnerable with her, and I share a story with her and ask for feedback very directly on this podcast. And she talks about the overall systemic challenges that women face when they do start to put themselves out there and make themselves more visible, and the ways that she works with women on these challenges as well. You are going to absolutely love this episode. So let's get started. Welcome to Women Changing Leadership. I am your host, Stacey Mayer, and I teach you how to get promoted, get paid, and bring your whole self to the leadership table. I am on a mission to change organizations from the C-suite out, because women are the new face of leadership, and we are doing it on our terms. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Changing Leadership. I am your host, Stacey Mayer, and super excited to have today's guest on my podcast. I think you are going to really love her as much as I do. And BBG reached out to me on LinkedIn and connected with me, and then we just started consuming each other's content. And what I love about her so much, I'm going to let her explain the work that she does. But essentially, long story short, I am coaching corporate women to stay in corporate, to figure out a way to use their strengths and their values and to climb the corporate ladder. And she is working with powerhouse women to slam the door on corporate. I'll let her explain that a little bit more. But I just think that's so amazing, because you're going to get both sides of the story today, and you're going to see so many different perspectives, you know, hopefully on this podcast on the regular. And I just want to bring in different voices, people who even disagree with me. And then with BBG, though, she has an incredible podcast called Speaking with Women. And when she first reached out to me, it was to be on her podcast. We'll link to that interview, which is coming out sometime around the same time as this one. We just had such a fascinating conversation about the work that I do in the same vein, which is like, oh, that's what I talk to my women about. That's not what I tell my women to do. And it was just such a good back and forth dialogue. So honestly, I don't know where today's conversation is going to go, but I know it's going to be pretty badass. So let's just get started. Hi, BBG. Great to see you.
Hi, Stacey. I love that intro. And I don't know where it's going to go either. And those are my favorite conversations where you're like, okay, I'm just going to show up and let's do this.
Yes. Yes. So good. So let me give your more formal introduction. BBG Hiley gives women the license to be unapologetically visible, make bold moves, and stop apologizing for what they want from their professional lives. I think that's it. Drop the mic. It's so good. So I spoke to this at the beginning, but why don't we just start out with the type of women that you work with, what you help them do?
Yeah. So I work with women who are, and this is actually important, because I've done not working with these type of women and I couldn't help. So the women that I help usually have 15 plus years of experience. They're usually in a leadership position. So we're talking, if they're still in corporate, we're talking director, senior director, and up. So they are two moments in their lives. They're either still in corporate and like you described, they want to slam the door and they're like, maybe I should have a backup plan. Maybe I should think this through. So I'm the person to help you think it through, but also create like the assets and the scaffolding that you're going to need for when you leave. And there's the woman who has left, who struck out on her own, tried different things. And it's like, okay, now I need a structure, right? Like I need to think this through. I need to identify, and that's the biggest thing that I do, identify what my red thread is, identify what my value is and what I'm putting out in the world. Figure out how I communicate that in a way that feels good to me, that I understand, and so I'm not stuttering my way through it, and then build like a commercial enterprise around it, a personal brand, and just put myself out there. I use LinkedIn a lot, but the truth is LinkedIn is a proxy. I use it only because if you can do LinkedIn, you can do anything. So we start with LinkedIn. Once we're good with LinkedIn, you can go on and, you know, do your own podcast, do public speaking. Like a lot of the women I work with want to do public speaking, blogging, whatever it is that you decide to do, thought leadership, you can. But I start with LinkedIn because it helps us understand and work through all the mindset stuff and all the junk our mind is going to throw at us when we decide to put ourselves out there.
That is so good. I just did a training inside my group. This is so funny. And it had a very different take on LinkedIn and how women tend to use it. And, you know, one of the things that I work with women on is they spend their energy in the wrong places. So if you're kind of thinking about influencers at your organization, right? They'll spend 90% of their energy trying to get their boss's approval when their boss's boss's boss is really the person they should be focusing on. And sometimes for my women, LinkedIn becomes this crutch in a way where they feel like, well, if I could just get my profile perfect, then I would find that next job. And I'm like, no. Like, that is not it at all. And so I kind of just want to start there. When you say, if you can do LinkedIn, you can do anything. Tell me, tell us all the things.
Stacey, you should not have opened that door. Okay, so here's the thing. Here's what happens. And this is a metaphor, because the relationship that, and I'm going to say women because that's like you, those are the people I work with, but I'm pretty sure this is across genders. But what will happen is that women will spend a lot of time making their profile perfect, just like they'll spend a lot of time making their website perfect, just like they'll spend a lot of time crafting their offer letter. They'll do all the things that keep them from doing the actual putting themselves out there. And so they won't add people on their LinkedIn network because their profile is not yet perfect. But we never know exactly what it means to have a perfect profile, right? That sort of bar is pushed always a little bit further. And so I call it procrastination. Like I'll call it out right here. It is procrastination. And with all my love for my clients, and I know how hard this is, but the LinkedIn profile, it's important. But what's more important is that you put your thoughts and your expertise out there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if it is perfect. And what I want to say here today for the entire world to hear is that there is no LinkedIn police. There is a LinkedIn police, so the post has to be perfect. I have women who are crafting a post for a week. Like, okay, what do you think about this? And no, there's no LinkedIn police. We all feel the same thing when we put ourselves out there. So yes, the profile, go for it, but don't let it be, like you said, a crutch or that thing.
It becomes a wall, like a barrier or something that you can hide behind, right? And you're like, oh, when I get this, when I get my resume ready, then I'll have that conversation with the recruiter. Like any of those things, it's just such a wall. And, you know, I've also been using procrastination as like a clue to not say, oh, I got to stop procrastinating, right? I just got to do it. But more like, okay, why are you procrastinating? What are you hiding behind? What is it that you're truly? And so to this visibility point that you're talking about, because I think for your women, a lot of it is the procrastination's pointing to the desire to not be visible. So you kind of spoke about that. For all of us, it's difficult. So what does that mean? Why is it so hard to be visible?
So I'm glad you asked this question, because it's very easy. We started with a very light tone around like, stop procrastinating, forget your LinkedIn profile and just do it. But if we take it back a little bit and we look at what women are truly afraid of, whether consciously or unconsciously. If we look at Naomi Osaka, who's that tennis player who had given boundaries around whether she's going to be visible to help her mental health, and everybody lost their minds. And they were like, mm-hmm. no, you mm-hmm. need to be visible. You need to talk to the press because that's what we pay you for. And there was this whole thing. And so I remember thinking about all the women who were sitting, taking notes around what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do and whether we're allowed to give boundaries or not allowed to give boundaries. When you think about all the women leaders, you think about AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman in New York, who was called out by another congressman and treated with the worst names. And all of the women in the world are looking at this thinking, okay, if I put myself in public office, this is the risk that I'm going to get. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Somebody posts something on LinkedIn. This happened to a client of mine recently. She posted something on LinkedIn that was brilliant, but that was pushing boundaries a little bit. Mm-hmm. And some random person came on her post and made a very trolly comment. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a policy that you do not engage with trolls, and she did not. So that person just stayed there by themselves looking like a troll. But that is what is happening. Women are seeing this, and it is telling them what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do, even at an unconscious level. And so it becomes super scary. And I think it's important to understand that that's what's going on in the background, because otherwise we will tend to be flip and say, just do it.
Right. Which is no. And yeah. This is so good. I want to share a quick story because you touched my heart. This literally just happened like a couple weeks ago, where my daughter was in a musical performance and she went to the music teacher and she asked if she could do this role. And her music teacher said, sure. And her friend in class told her, I hate you. That was what I wanted. And she came home to me saying that she shouldn't have asked. Mm. That was the lesson that she learned. And I was like, my heart just broke. And I was like, so anywhere from the post that you make and you get the troll to, like, you know, a 7-year-old girl asking for what she wants and then being told that that was a bad thing to do. How many times when we were little did that just get passed over? Like, I'm sure I ask for things and then that becomes imprinted in my head that that's not what you're supposed to do. Luckily, I was able to have a conversation with her and ask her if that's true, if she felt like, you know, it's like we could expand upon it. But those ideas are we're seeing it. It's in front of us. It's so important to know that that's what we're quote unquote up against. So then what? So then what do we do?
So that example, I just want to spend like a quick minute on what you just shared. It's such a, and I'm so sorry that your daughter had to go through that. And what it does is it imprints in our bodies what we're allowed to, because what happened when her friend said, I hate you, is it made her not belong anymore. We belong to our friends. We belong to our community. So when we do things that make us go a little bit out of the spaces that we are allowed to be in, then we don't belong anymore.
Yeah.
And that is something that nobody wants to feel, right? And that is so scary that we will do anything not to do that. And so when at 7 years old, and I'm so happy you had that conversation with her, because that imprints. And then the lens you have on the world is, if I want to belong, I need to check myself before I'm checked by somebody else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So to that end, you know, one of the conversations that I had in the LinkedIn training that I did is that I have had several clients literally get sent to the human resources office for posting on LinkedIn. Like, you know, and when you work for large corporations, there are policies in place. And then sometimes you can cross that line and you have your job. And luckily for these clients, they were not ready to slam the door on corporate. They were ready to slam the door on their organization. And so it sort of led to the push that they needed to go someplace else where they could share their ideas openly. And they were able to create that for themselves. So there was a silver lining. What I was trying to share with the women in my group was this idea that that exists, right? So that, you know, you do, it's important for you to know, because what they're doing is subconsciously posting small. So they're posting these sort of like mediocre, benign comments and things that don't matter, like congratulations and good job. And like, it's not even worth your time. And then if you're going to post something that matters, right, that this is what you're up against. And it's just so important to know, but because this is the work that you're doing day in and day out with women. Okay. So now we know it. We know what we're asking for when we make ourselves visible. We know that trolls might come. We know that we might get sent to the human resources office, like whatever those things. Then like, how do you coach your women to still be visible with all of this knowledge?
Yeah. So there are a number of things. And what I find really interesting about that example on human resources and how you brought it back is that it's an example of bad organizational behavior.
Absolutely.
And it's always important to highlight that, because the choices that you're making as a woman when you see that has to be a choice of not, oh, I need to check myself because there is a problem with me. I'm making the choice to stay in this organization for whatever reason, and they're all valid. You know, I need the revenue, whatever else, but I'm making the choice. So I know that my voice still deserves to be heard. I just have decided to take a little bit of time to spend with this organization until I can have a plan B. And that's critical.
Yes.
Is a problem.
Yes.
The second thing to think about, a lot of the times, and I spend a lot of times going through women's profiles, and I see what you're describing, Stacey, where they'll repost stuff, or they'll say congrats, or they'll say things like that. And so one of the reasons is they don't know what to post on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes as simple as that, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't know what to post on LinkedIn because they don't understand the depth of their expertise. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm saying they don't understand the depth of their expertise, I'm pretty sure that there are a number of women who are listening to me and they're like, what expertise?
Girl, you got so much.
Right? Exactly. And so a lot of my work is around acknowledging that expertise, codifying it. This is what it is. This is why it is important. Allowing space for women's stories. So we will tell each other those stories. We will describe them. What I call your change story, the reason why you're doing this work, your change sentence, like what is it that you want to put out in the world? That codifies those things that are in your brain. And it makes it easier for you to share them and to start being strategic about the way that you share them, because you don't have to go out there and then take a banner and go down and demonstrate in the street. You can start sharing small pieces of that through content pillars because you now really understand what you are about. And I think that's the big difference. People don't post because they don't understand what they can post. And they look at people who post as in, oh my God, I wish I could do what you do. You can do this tomorrow. You just have to spend a little bit of time thinking back about all this expertise that you've had, all this work that you've done, and all the stories that are associated to it, right? And start sharing in small incremental ways. And you'll see, I have one client who's doing this right now. I have two actually. And it's so exciting because what happens is they do it in small incremental ways. And you're like, oh, look at that.
It's working. Right? Yeah.
People are engaging. And now you're like, people actually care what I have to say. And so you're not in your head. Because the thing I say the most is that you are not going to get answers from your head. I'm sorry. Yes, we are heady beings. And we think that we're going to get all the answers from our brain, but we're not. Because if our body is not ready to do something or hasn't experienced something, it'll freeze us up. So when you post on LinkedIn, you start to see the reality that it's not so hard and that you get results from it. Your body is like, whew, okay. And
then you
can continue and go to bigger and braver places, right?
Right. That's how you overcome procrastination right there. You just start to do. And by the doing for you, it sounds like the investigation of your own personal stories first. It's not like, well, just post. Yeah. It's like, it's the investigation, the asking. And so as you were talking about stories, I had an idea in my head that you probably have some really great stories. So I would love to hear your story about how you learned to become unapologetically visible. No pressure.
No pressure at all. No, I do have stories. And actually, the reason I started doing this work is stories combined in one. Okay. In 2017, I came back from my maternity leave. So my son was born in 2015. I was a consultant, still do a little bit of consulting work. And I came back in 2017 for maternity leave. And I found things so unbelievably hard, Stacey. Like my brain was just, my son wasn't sleeping. So I was brain dead. And as a consultant, when you go back in organizations, you have to be immediately on the ball, right? Like you don't get a soft landing. You have to come in and just get the work done. And it made me realize that I was probably not alone and that there were other women who were feeling that. And so I started to explore creating a Facebook group with women around exploring our professional lives and realized that I was very, very good at helping with interviewing and helping with like crafting their tools, their CVs, et cetera. And so I did that for a little bit, not paying. I was just like, I love this work. And parallelly to that, I took a LinkedIn course that I paid a lot of money for, like a lot. Mm-hmm. And it triggered me, Stacey. It triggered me so hard that I didn't do any of the work. Mm-hmm. Thousands of dollars, I didn't do any of the work because I felt so incompetent because I was trying to sell consulting services that I was drowning in imposter syndrome with. Mm-hmm. And so it was impossible for me to do that thing that I'm now asking women to do. Fast forward a few years later, when I started to get clarity around the fact that I wanted to work with women and I started to post about that, I realized how much of an impact it was having and how much of I wasn't the only one. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is history. It was just play. I would just try things. The reason I told you about that course is because everything I learned in that course that I couldn't use at the time became this base for what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Ready.
You weren't telling the right story, right? So that story, you could have doubled, tripled down on it and still would have felt. You actually mentioned imposter syndrome. I'd love to hear more about your take on that and what it felt like for you. And because just in how you described it, I was like, oh, it's similar to the procrastination itself is not the problem. The imposter syndrome was a clue that you were on the wrong path, right? And exactly. Once you figured out your story, it just exploded. So yeah, tell me your thoughts about imposter syndrome.
So imposter syndrome is something I'm really, really passionate about. I give public talks about it. I have for a really long time. Well, no, it's not a really long time, maybe 3 years now. And I've researched it a lot because it was something that was keeping me back. And I always thought, I always did really good work in consulting, Stacey. Like I always delivered, always. And it was so hard. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking I'm going to fail this time again, right? And the thing is, I delivered good work, but I'm a last minute type of person. So the good work would happen like in the last few hours before the deliverable had to be submitted. And in my head, that was a demonstration that I was a fake. If anybody knew that the work I was doing was done at the last minute, they would think I wasn't competent. Mm. And so there was this whole story I was telling myself. The truth was, it was possible for me to do this at the last minute. One, because I was thinking about it permanently. And two, because I'm really good at what I was doing, right? But it was such a source of suffering for me. And then it was also a source of undercharging. Like I... To get to the point where I am now in terms of what I charge for my services, it's been climbing up the Himalaya. When I started, I was pay what you will, because mm-hmm. I literally felt like it didn't have value, that anybody else could do this, like all the things we tell ourselves when we have imposter syndrome. And so I became super passionate about the subject. And in recent years, if you start to look on what's being said, there's a lot of thought leadership. There was an HBR article that came out recently saying we should stop telling women they have imposter syndrome. And the thesis behind that is that it's a systemic problem. And so we should fix the system and not fix individual women. You can't say no to that, right? Like that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But that is also not sustainable because systems takes generations to change.
Right, right.
So we can't tell individual women, like if I think of myself, the idea that I need to sit by the sidelines and wait for some activist somewhere to change a system so that I can have access to that table that is mine. No. So what I want for women is, yes, you can totally not get over, but reframe and understand what's happening with you with your imposter syndrome. And eventually the system will change. But you need to understand what's happening with you so you don't suffer from that anymore. And you don't play small, Stacey.
Mm-hmm. The problem. Yeah.
But we play small. Mm-hmm. So it's a soapbox for me, very hard to get me off of it. But this is a conversation we need to have because women don't feel safe. And then now because we're saying systems need to change, they don't even feel like they're allowed to talk about imposter syndrome anymore because
it's not a
sexy conversation anymore. Mm.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because the denial of it is also part of the problem, right? Like it starts to make you feel like your thoughts about that aren't valid and that you should just get over it or move on or, you know, wait for somebody else to do something, or if we just had more seats at the table. And we've seen over and over again that even now there's some research that came out that women are in corporate are the fastest growing number of CEOs. So a lot of male CEOs are leaving and women are replacing them. And the first thing I thought of is like, get them coaching. And it's not because the truth is men have coaching. Okay, fine. The problem is a lot of times I find women don't ask for coaching because we're going to do everything ourselves, right? Okay, so that's one piece of the puzzle. But when I read this article, I was like, oh my gosh, yes. And we have to give the individuals, you know, support, right? The individuals also need support to be successful in a world that is not created for them. The, you know, the corporate world at that level is not created for them. We're recreating it, which I'm very happy to do. But we're all going to have to come together as women, you on this podcast, me on your podcast, and letting women know that there is support for this change, right? And so...
I know it's something people say, but I did. But you are so right. Because part of imposter syndrome, and I'm not saying women have imposter syndrome systematically, but part of the way it shows up is the way we think about our competence. And one of the ways that we think about our competence when we're struggling with imposter thoughts is I should be able to do this. And mm-hmm. I should be able to do this myself without asking for help. Mm-hmm. And that is so gendered, right? So these
right.
women.
Oh, 100%. Right? Yeah.
And they mm-hmm. don't know, like, who can I ask for help? Who can I tell that I am struggling? The reason I have a job mm-hmm. is because the women that I work with are at a level that they're like, who can I say this to? Can't mm-hmm. say it to my board.
Right. Right.
And I can't say it to my employees. Who can I say it to? And the truth is, we're all struggling and we all need a place where somebody mm-hmm. will listen and reframe for us and say, hey, mm-hmm. I need you to look at all of this. And it totally makes sense that you're afraid and that's fine, but you'll be okay. And here are the steps you can take, right?
You know, as I'm talking to you, you have these two incredibly powerful women behind you. And when you were like, who do I tell? So you won't be able to see the visual of this podcast. Definitely go to my Instagram. I'm sure we'll have a clip so that you can see these phenomenal women. But I see it as this triangle, right? And, you know, Bibiji's in the middle and then she has these two women behind her. And when she was talking about who can I tell, I was like, those two women right there are lifting you up. And they are, you know, they're all part of this, that we have other women, that we have a community. We joke about all the time about that person got promoted or that person had success because they go to the golf course or they had drinks or they're best friends with the CEO. You know what? Yes. Yes, they are. So be best friends with the women behind you. Get in communities like BBG's community and my community so that you can have that level of support because we deserve the golf course. The problem is that golf course doesn't exist at our company. So we have to create it. Cool. Because then you get to actually pick your people.
Absolutely.
I'm like,
you get to say, I don't want to go to the golf course.
I don't want to.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to jump on a Zoom with you.
Yes.
And spend some time on that Zoom with you because that's what feels good to me. Yesterday, I had a coaching call and we did the telling of stories, change stories. Mm-hmm. And I swear to you, Stacey, like when I the privilege that is this work, to hear these stories where women let each other be witnessed by each other. Like, to this point, it's making me want to cry, because you have a witness for that so important story that you want to put out in the world, the reason why you want the change that you want. And you have other women that are cheering you on and are seeing you and are telling you what they see. It is the most powerful thing. And I have built my career on having powerful women around me. And I don't mean powerful by, you know, status. I mean, powerful.
Yes, yes.
Are.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
That's
so speaking of, we had a really awesome moment on my podcast interview with you where you almost did some direct coaching for me at the end. And it was so good, like how you saw me. And I'm going to, I want to do that again. I'm actually just inspired. Maybe you put me, BBG, you bring out these other sides of me that I don't even know are possible. So, okay. So I'm wondering if you can talk me through my change story. Can you coach me for a minute? Are you up for that? Like, what's a change story? And I would be happy to share what I think it is and then help me make it better.
Okay, I would absolutely love to. Let me tell you really quickly what a change story is. There are a few steps that need to happen before, but I will ask you some questions. So a change story starts with a personal experience, something that you lived at any moment. It can be childhood, it can be later on in life, but something that you lived that left an emotion, a strong one, anger, sadness, happiness, being elated, being proud, something. And that emotion led to a decision. A lot of the time, the decision might be unconscious, right? It is a moment when you are sad because you've seen an injustice and you promise yourself that that injustice is never going to happen again on your watch. Mm-hmm. So one of my friends does, you can actually see her on my, listen to her on my podcast with menopause. Her menopause story was extremely difficult, and her transition. And she, when she managed to get herself out of it, she swore that it wouldn't happen to any woman again if she could avoid it. And it became like this, made her pivot her career. It became this life force that moved her, right? So there's a decision, and that decision then affects the way that the way that you show up in your personal or professional life, right? So those are the pieces of your change story. The way to find out what that story is, because you have to first link it to that thing that you're doing, is to figure out what the change that you're putting out in the world is.
So what I'm doing today, and then kind of go back in time and say, was there, are there moments? Cause I'm sure, like, I just thought of a story when I was 6 years old, and there's not like, there's no way I had the awareness that I have today as to what I swore to never have happen again. Right. Like, it was, tell me my story.
Okay, because our 6 year old selves take the decisions. They do for our lives. And we don't know that, but that what just happened with you, the story, that's usually the one. So let's hear it.
Okay, great. So my parents got divorced when I was six, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And so that's all I knew. But she decided that, I mean, she had to go to work, right? And so she was talking to me. I distinctly remember her having to study for an exam at UPS to work in the office, right? So it was like, she had to actually study. And I was 6 years old, and I helped her study for that. And I remember having conversations with her about, like, thinking that of course she could get this job. Like, it didn't make any sense why she couldn't. But she had some feelings around whether or not she was able to, right? Whether or not she could pass the quiz, whether or not, I'm like, you're amazing. And I remember being like, of course you can. Of course you can do. She's like, well, I don't have a college degree, right? And I just remember there being a disconnect between my belief in her and her belief in her. And then she passed the test, and I was just like, well, yeah, see? And I felt really empowered that I was able to help her. I felt really proud of myself. But also just that glimmer of the difference in reality, right? So that I saw her as this amazing, capable woman who could do anything that she wanted to do. And then she, but I could tell that there was something about her that didn't believe that.
Yeah. And now what you do is called corporate badass. You knew your mom was a badass, right?
Oh, she was such a badass.
Right. And you knew it, and she didn't know it. And if you think back to that feeling that you had when she came back and she had gotten it and the pride and you're like, I told you.
Yeah.
That same hit from the women you're working with. They come in not feeling like they can. And you're like, I know you can. Watch me.
Yeah.
And you get them to a point where they do get that you know, that hit from, I did it.
Yeah.
So that's that story is amazing because there's a quasi one-to-one link between what you're doing now and the realization of that six-year-old girl that there was a gap. Like, it doesn't make sense. How could this badass mom not realize that she's all that?
Mm-hmm. And when I'm really excited that we share the story in this context, because I actually hadn't thought of it that way. So I've shared this story as my mom was the first person I ever coached, blah, blah, blah. But when you use the word change, that something changed in me in that moment, I told the story differently just now. Yeah. And I actually felt it. I felt a little more goosebumpy. I felt like a little, it felt like more grounded. It felt more true. Yeah. So I thank you. You just gave me such a huge gift.
It elicits an emotion. That's the thing. When I tell my clients, like, what does it do and when do you use it? You use it to fuel yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It elicits an emotion that you're like, ah, this is what I want to happen. And it also becomes really easy. If you come on my podcast, we hadn't done this exercise, but I could have said to you, Stacey, why do you do this work? And now you would have that, like,
Yeah.
That's why you do this work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's one last thing I want to say about the change story, and it's important. Sometimes our change story is something deeply intimate that we don't feel ready to tell the world, and that's okay. You still have to tell the story to yourself so you acknowledge it to yourself. Mm-hmm. I recommend to my client to have a secondary story that is just as valid and just as important. So if you listen to podcasts I've been on or to my own origin story, I talk about the woman I interviewed in my house who started crying immediately because she didn't feel like she was competent. It is an important story. It is a change story, but it's not the change story. For a number of reasons, I can't share my change story publicly. Mm-hmm. And so I want to invite women to not feel stuck if they can't share their change story publicly, but to look for the secondary story that they can change, but to also keep their own as fuel and to test in safe spaces, telling and being witnessed with that story, because it makes, quote unquote, real. It makes the desires you have real.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So, speaking of stories, you have an incredible podcast, Speaking with Women. Can you tell me a little bit more about that podcast? And also, I'm curious because I know that you have a pretty strong international reach with your work. So I don't know if that's tied into your podcast and how you're connecting with different women like me and sharing these stories, but tell me a little bit about both, I guess.
Yeah. So Speaking with Women is actually a pandemic baby. And it is very tied to the international aspect of my work. So I've always loved podcasts from day one. I wanted one, didn't know how to do it. And when the pandemic hit, I started to reach out to women on LinkedIn saying, hey, would you connect over Zoom to answer three questions about women and their confidence? And so many women all over the world said yes. So I did these interviews. And then when I was like, that's your podcast. Like, what are you doing?
Right?
So I started to put it out there. And then I did a few episodes around, I called it the 2020 virtual coffee tour. And then I was like, okay, I tried solo episodes and I was like, okay, this is working. So I did a mix of solo episodes and interviews. And I've just fallen in love with the podcast. Like, it's an entity in itself. It's not what I'm doing. It exists. And I'm just in a deeply loving relationship with this podcast. And so what it is just a space for women to speak of their awesomeness. And for me to do solo episodes around the things that might get in the way or that I would like women to think about around their visibility and their awesomeness. And I am an international person. I call myself a third culture kid. I've lived all over the world. And I realized recently that my business was international, which is like the day I realized, I was like, this is this. So I have clients on the West Africa in three different countries. I have clients in the UK. I have clients in the US. I have clients on the west coast of Canada, here in Quebec, and I feel like I'm forgetting. And I have conversations all over, right? Like mm-hmm. Singapore, East Coast in Kenya, where I grew up. Like my dream is to be a plane advisor. So I'm on the plane and I'm going from one place to the other and I'm taking
I want to go with you. Can we go on a trip?
Airports. It's just
so good. Oh, thank you so much for this whole episode. It's such a treat and so delightful to get to know you. And your wisdom is just really, really palpable. So as we head out today, any final words of advice for that woman who's trying to claim her voice at the table? She is struggling to get to that next level, but more importantly, to figure out what that voice is and how she can be included in the conversation.
Yeah. If you'll allow me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you my LinkedIn post from today, because it's the answer to your question.
All right.
I'd like to share. So it's called Separate Boxes. So here it is. My 8-year-old is in a testing phase. It feels like he's stress testing the things we have told him to make sure that they hold up. Right now, he's scrutinizing love. He wants to know if there's anything he can do that will make us stop loving him. Like if he makes us angry, if he steals, if he does something horrible, he's asking all the questions. My answer to him is, it is not technically possible for me to stop loving you. I can be angry, so angry that I don't want to speak to you or that I can't talk to you, but love and anger are kept in two separate boxes in my heart. I can love you and still be angry. I can be angry and still love you. Two different boxes and they don't mix. I want to offer you that metaphor as you start on your visibility journey. Fear and action are in two different boxes. You can feel all the fear and do what you need to do to work through it. And you can get into action with your visibility at the same time. They can coexist. Feeling fear does not have to keep the action box shut. So that's what I would
add. When is your book coming out? Oh my God, that's freaking amazing. Wow. I mean, I say like you can feel fear and do it anyway, but that story just, so good. You're a storyteller. It's absolutely brilliant. But I just thank you for that. That's going to stick with me. And I'm going to see your son too in my head. It's so good.
He's awesome.
Oh,
thank you.
Tell us how we can find you, follow you, connect with you, all the things.
LinkedIn is my hangout. It's where I procrastinated, but it's where I hang out. So please find me there and then listen to Speaking with Women. It's my joy and love project. So I would love for people to jump on and listen to what's happening there. Some beautiful women who are on that podcast, you included. So yeah, that's where they can find me.
Awesome. All right. Thanks so much, PBG. Take care. Before you go, I have a question for you. Do you know how close you are to your next promotion? Really? Not what your boss has told you, not what you even believe to be true, but have you actually taken the time to sit down, take an assessment, review the 5 categories that it takes to get promoted into senior executive leadership positions and decided where you fall in each category and given yourself a ranking on a scale of 1 to 10 of how close you are to getting your next promotion? Have you done this? Well, now's your chance. If that feels interesting to you and you're like, hey, I want to know exactly how close I might actually be or how far away you might be and what it's going to take to get you even closer, then I invite you to take my promotability quiz. This is a quiz that I put together with practical tips that actually tell you where you're lacking and where you're winning. What are the areas that you actually need to improve and not necessarily what your boss is telling you all the time so that you can take concrete steps towards landing that next promotion and changing the face of the leadership table. Go to yourpromotabilityscore.com to take your free assessment today. Yourpromotabilityscore.com, and let me know how it goes.